while Ardsale Baptist Church brings you the Word of God with practicality and simplicity. As you listen to this message, we trust that it will equip and empower you to find and fulfill your purpose.
A very warm welcome to everyone, both in the service today and online as well. We've had three baptisms, so I'm going to disappoint you and say I'm going to cut the message in half today. And instead of my original 128 points, it's just going to be 64. Just kidding. Okay. The message today is about leadership. And it's like, well, how does that tie in with these three young men that have been gone through the waters of baptism? But the message today is about leadership. And where do we go from here? And there are three books in the Bible that deal with particularly leadership. There's the letters to the churches that Paul writes, and Peter, and John, James, they write. But there's three books of the Bible which Paul writes to leaders, or young leaders, people coming through, to say, this is what I've learned with my experience. This is the scars that I've got. And this is what you should consider. And today we wanted to kind of just consider those three things. Because I'm going to say this. I was baptized at the age of 15 years of age. At that time I had no idea that I'd be asked to be a leader in the church. Or indeed that I'd be speaking today on there. And who are the leaders of this church going to be in 2050, if the Lord hasn't come by that stage? Who are the leaders going to be in the year 2050? Well, the clue is it's not going to be me, because I would have completely lost my marbles by that stage. So the city of Ephesus was not an enticing proposition. So it's a very, very large city in the ancient world. Possibly in the first century, it's possibly second in population in the Roman world, and probably in the entire world, to Rome itself, which was a complete anomaly with 1 million inhabitants. But ancient cities couldn't sustain that kind of population. Rome only did it by because they didn't have the grain a yield within a reach of the city to be able to sustain a population like that. Rome only did it by artificially enforcing grain supplies from Egypt and North Africa. But Ephesus was a city of probably 200,000 to 250,000 people. And some of you might have been to the ancient ruins of Ephesus. If you have in Turkey, I've had the privilege of doing that. You can actually still see incredibly the kind of ancient city as it's laid out and it's described in the book of Acts as well. It contained one of the seven wonders of the world. It contained the Temple of Artemis. It was a pilgrimage site to the goddess Artemis. We don't know much about her these days, or we don't learn much about her, but this was a major pilgrimage site. And when we look in the book of Acts, when Paul goes there, he's there for 2 years, bringing on the church, trying to grow the people, converting the people, and he's having so much success that one of the people that hang around pilgrimage sites, the people that kind of make money off the pilgrims that go to pilgrimage sites, and Christianity has its own issues. If you go to Jerusalem, there's a lot of people kind of selling you pictures of the depictions of the cross or various things as well. Exactly that same thing was happening in the first century for the goddess Artemis, and a silversmith that made images of Artemis or her temple was feeling threatened by the good work that Paul was doing in the city of Ephesus. What's going to happen to our trade? This guy is talking about someone else, not Artemis. And there's a huge riot. They go down the street. You can actually still walk down the high street of Ephesus. They walk down, end up in a large theatre. So it's a Greek-style theatre, of a semicircular theatre. of about 24 to 25,000 people. It's a big city, you know, this, and they're there for 2 hours shouting, "Great is Artemis of the Ephesians! Great is Artemis of the Ephesians!" They don't know what they're kind of shouting about for part of the time, but and some are shouting out different things. Eventually, the kind of crowd calms down and is sent home by the city officials. Paul leaves there, but he's in a. The church is in a precarious situation. And he calls Timothy, one of his young converts, who's an older man, to a younger minister. Says, "You need to go to Ephesus, because actually there's some threats in Ephesus, but the threats aren't from your Artemis, the Artemis followers. They're not actually from that. They're actually from within the church itself." And he prophesies at the end Paul prophesies at the end that this might happen, and there's two things that are going on in that church. There's leaders that have arisen in the church, and some are going on. There's a kind of large Jewish population. Some of them are kind of going on about all the kind of rules of Jewishness, all the genealogies obsessed. The Jewish audience. Where do we come from? What is our kind of bloodline? How is our connection? And all the laws, all that stuff, all the stuff that, in fact, that the Pharisees were getting into, which Jesus himself pointed out to say, you know, all your laws and all your law abiding, and you haven't got a heart for these people. And I guess the first thing to be said today, Timothy was sent as a young leader. And I'm just going to say, I'm a leader of the church here. And if I'm going to criticize the leadership team, I would say this: we're too old. Maybe not the best thing to say with a deacon's meeting coming up next week, but... hopefully I'll have patched over with a few of them before then. And a young leader coming through. He hasn't got so much confidence. He's going into a difficult situation. But I'm saying to those people, there's some capable people in our midst, in their 30s, in their 40s. Why not consider a leadership role in this church? Very, very capable people. I can see your skills and your abilities. "Well, I've got a mortgage to pay. I've got a big career. It's really pressured at my work at the moment. I've got a young family." All of that is absolutely true, I have no doubt. But where are the young leaders? Where are the Timothys? Sort of coming through. Now, I'm not going to promise you it's a star job. That's not the reason that we're looking for it. Here's a job advert that was put out in about 100 years ago. Do you want this job? "Men wanted for hazardous journey, small wages, bitter cold, long months of complete darkness, constant danger, safe return doubtful, honour and recognition in case of success." That was an advert for a polar expedition, and thousands of people applied to it, actually. So whoever wrote that advert, kind of reverse psychology was great. I'm not going to promise you that... The situation is an easy one. That's not the reason. Timothy was not going into a situation in Ephesus that was an easy situation. He was called there, pointed there by Paul, and said, "Look, you need to be confident. This is the issue between when I was my 15-year-old self and myself now. I'm not that much different, really. I'm a slightly kind of wrinkly 13-year-old is what I would call myself. The difference is I kind of know myself a bit better than I did when I was in my teenage years. And what I would say to you is consider where you're going to be and how you're going to grow and how you can contribute to the Lord's work in this place or in another place. And consider kind of a leadership. And Paul then goes on to say, there's three elements to Christian leadership. And dealing with these, all these kind of people that have coming up with the, this is the genealogy that I'm part of, and this is, are you part of this connection, and do you know about this law, and do you know about this law? Or indeed coming up with complete fantasies of kind of what Christianity is and what it isn't. I'm just going to be a little bit controversial today. In the Catholic Church, it's believed that the Virgin Mary was a virgin when she died. Despite the fact that it says, in the Gospels, she and Joseph decided not to come together in union until the baby was born. Now, that doesn't mean, of course, that but they were husband and wife after that. But I would assume from that Jesus had some brothers and sisters. There's only one virgin birth that I'm aware of, that I believe in. And so we need to cut through some of the fantasies about what Christianity is and what Christianity is not. We do it in kind of 3 days. It's overlaid with love, says Paul. If we look at our text, all this is overlaid with love. Let me just get the... As I urged you when I went into Macedonia, stay there in Ephesus so that you may command certain people not to teach false doctrines any longer or devote themselves to myths and endless genealogies. Such things promote controversial speculations rather than advancing God's work, which is by faith. The goal of this command is love. That overarches all of what we do. Which comes from a pure heart and a good conscience and sincere faith. Now, I work in human resources. Sorry about that. Someone has to. We're not always that popular. I think traffic wardens are slightly less popular than us. But somebody kind of has to do this stuff. And I'm called upon a number of times to take people into disciplinaries if they've fallen foul of the company procedures or acted inappropriately or kind of all those things. And I've got a list of the disciplinary procedure, how it's done, that I take through the things, the offences that are considered gross misconduct and those things. And I need, for consistency's sake, to stick to those. But for Christian leaders, Paul turns it around and says, before you consider the other person, you have to look at yourself. Okay? So if you're gonna kind of make any kind of decision here, look to yourself first. Do you have love? Do you have a pure heart? Do you have a good conscience? Do you have sincere faith? Look to yourself first. Before you even consider anybody else. Now, a pure heart doesn't mean a perfect heart. I've already upset my fellow deacons this morning. My heart isn't actually perfect. What does it mean, this pure heart? It means a giving heart. Are you prepared to give, not seeking a reward for what you're giving? step number one. And I have to say, this church, and pretty much most churches, survive on the giving hearts of their people. The stuff that's done behind the scenes, the covers were miraculously kind of lifted off, the baptistry was miraculously kind of filled with water, the church has been cleaned, the grass has been cut. These things don't happen by miracles, they happen by people giving of themselves, not expecting a reward, but they have a giving heart, a pure heart. Are you in a position where you give on the basis that you're not expecting to receive back? Second thing is this, a good conscience. Good conscience is probably the best English translation of the Greek here, which really means someone who knows the difference between right and wrong. So do you have the ability to understand right from wrong? Well, we all have our conscience. We know when we've done wrong. And sometimes we also need wisdom and steering as well through our experienced lives. But do you know the difference between right and wrong? And finally, do you have a sincere faith? Again, not a perfect faith. My faith is not perfect, but I am genuinely trying to follow and improve and increase my likeness towards Jesus Christ. I'm never going to achieve anything like it, but I'm genuinely trying to consider those things. I'm certainly not perfect. And this is in contrast to the teachers of the law that say perfection comes through obedience to all the laws. Now, Paul himself was a Pharisee, as you remember. He started off as a Pharisee. He calls himself the chief of sinners because he persecuted the church in the first place. He said he was shown mercy. Comes in the following verses in this book. I'm shown mercy by God, but I'm the chief of sinners. He's not putting himself up as the perfect example. He's putting himself up as someone that demonstrates love through a pure heart, a heart of giving and not receiving. A good conscience. The ability to discern right from wrong. And a genuine faith. Someone that continues in their faith. Falls, for sure. Makes mistakes, for sure. Has periods of unbelief, for sure. But continues in their faith. And can stand at the end of their lives and say the words that Paul could say. I've run the great race. I've completed the course. I've kept the faith. Now, what's the message of this morning, really? Well, I know probably within 20 minutes of actually leaving the building, you'll have forgotten most of what I said. And that's okay. That's okay. Because that's me on a normal Sunday. So I'm in no position to judge. But the message today is this. Jesus Christ changes lives. We've witnessed that on three occasions this morning. We witnessed that on Easter Sunday. Jesus Christ changes lives in the first century and in the 21st century. Jesus Christ changes lives. And we're also called, I'm going to call you youngsters because I can do. You youngsters, we're also called to build ourselves, not just for our own efforts, but to lead and to grow the Church of Jesus Christ. And is that leadership going to be you? I hope so. When I was 15, I had no concept of kind of the words that I'm speaking now, what they would mean, or the fact that some one day I might be called in some small way to be part of the leadership of the church. But to the future leaders out there, follow 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, 1 Titus. Read these works. Read the first chapter of 1 Timothy 1, where we're speaking today. And listen to the advice that the Apostle Paul has to say to you, I would say. Amen.
We trust that you've been blessed and believe that this message has brought you greater understanding. For more information, or to follow up on what you've heard in this message, visit us on www.phbc.org.uk. God bless you.